I think focus is important, but as long as I'm focusing on my real estate and I have structure to make sure I'm on top of the deals that I have, and I make a commitment with myself and my business partner to not take on more than I can handle, I think that's really the key.
Should you be laser focused on one asset class, or should you be willing to be flexible and move to other asset classes, or maybe a different type of deal gets dropped in your lap? Should you steer away from it because it's not multifamily, or because it's not self-storage, or, you know, the thing that you've been working towards and learning about? But man, it looks like it might work. Are you willing to step into that? And our guest today, he's going to share why and how he does just that. He does lots of different types of real estate, from commercial to wholesaling to some development. He's going to share some about that. But really, man, how does he even accept that, right? Like, go into a market where there might be a different type of deal, a market he's never been into before. How do you build that team? How do you set those expectations? And he's going to share with you just how he does that. His name is Nick LaMagna. Nick has been investing virtually across the country since 2006. He helps investors transition from small to mid-sized commercial deals. He is a jiu-jitsu black belt, golden gloves boxer, and amateur MMA fighter, and the host of the A-Game podcast. Nick is going to share a lot with you today on the Real Estate Syndication Show. Nick, welcome to the show. Honored to meet you and have you on. I know you have had your hand in lots of different aspects of real estate and doing some very creative deals. Just from our short conversation, it sounds pretty amazing. But I know you have also been really good or created skills around building teams and screening people and being able to do that all over the country or in different locations, right? And that's difficult even locally, right? If all my team worked in one place, I think it'd be easier for me, but it's not always the best, right? Or we've had to learn to work remotely. So looking forward to getting into that. Give the listeners a little more about who you are and then what your focus is in real estate. And let's dive into some of your superpower.
Definitely. I appreciate you having me on. I'm really excited to be on. 1,300 episodes is insane. So congrats to you on that and that dedication. That's awesome. But yeah, you know, I grew up in New York, a little bit of a lost soul, just going to college to have a good time. I wound up suffering a very serious permanent hand injury when I was trying to do construction while I was waiting to go into the academies for law enforcement and some federal agent stuff. Eliminated all of the path that I thought I was going to go on. Read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, which my mom forced me to read, and decided, hey, real estate's something I can do. I don't have any money. I don't have any experience. I don't have any credit. And they say, you don't need any of those things. You know, I started getting into the single family space, going to a lot of seminars, trying to figure out how to get started. And because New York was very intimidating for me, and it was $700,000 for 50 square feet, I was forced to look into other markets and invest remotely before investing remotely was really a thing. So, you know, kind of pairing into what you were mentioning, that's how I, through trial and error for way longer than most people have, got very good at putting people together remotely because I just had to. I didn't really have much of a choice. Started doing some single family stuff when the market was a little weird and crazy, and started doing some creative deals, which oddly right now look like they might come back into play as the market starts to cycle around a little bit. But, you know, got into some of the burst stuff, some of the residential rehab, buy and rent, buy and flip, and then eventually started getting into wholesaling, got back into flipping, scaled up into some multifamily stuff. Along the way, been doing jiu-jitsu, boxing, MMA, eating a lot of pizza, playing with a couple of dogs I've had over the last 10 years, and it's just been an interesting journey. So I've constantly gone places to try and figure out like where I need to focus as far as like, I should only be doing flips. I should only be doing multifamily, but then I'll have conversations with other guys that are like, it's all working for you. So maybe that's not the wrong thing for you. Maybe you're not good at focusing. So I almost feel like dirty when I'm like, I don't have like one thing that I do, but you know, so land development, residential, buy to rent, sub 2, lease options, multifamily wholesaling, mobile home parks. I'm very experienced, but not an expert in one thing by any means.
I would love to talk about that because I think it's going to be a great transition into what we're going to talk about anyway. Speak to the mindset to being okay with being able to do so many things. I've seen people that do what you're talking about. Man, it's like they can go buy that piece of land and just do something crazy with it and make a ton of money, or they can go buy that multifamily property, or hey, they can go do some wholesaling on the side, or hey, they can all these things, right? And they figure these things out. But then I do know the power of focus as well, right? I do know that. I've seen it in my life personally, in different aspects of my life when I've been super focused on learning something and getting really good at it before going, say, to something else or whatever. How have you thought through that? And you know, you talked about just the struggle there a little bit. Man, how did you make the decision to just really be okay with, okay, hey, if I can go do something, this piece of property, or, you know, just kind of up in the air?
You know, oddly enough, I think podcasting has almost helped me start to be okay with it. And I'm still like in the recovery program of like just being okay talking about how I'm not okay with it. So I still don't know if it's the right thing to do, but you talk to enough people, which I'm sure you find a lot too, and they almost give you validation or confirmation, or you have conversations like this and people are like, hey, don't change that. It reminds a little bit like on the podcasting side, when I talk to people initially and they're like, well, what's your podcast about? And I'm like, well, I have UFC fighters, I have athletes, I have entrepreneurs, I have business guys, I have comedians, and like the journey to success is all the same. And they go, you can't do that. You got to have a real estate guy and it can only be that, or it can only be this. And I'm like, but Joe Rogan's like the most popular podcast.
I was going to say, you look at Joe Rogan or Tim Ferriss, or they're having
like a Bigfoot hunter on one day and then like a politician and then like a so, you know, and people are saying that doesn't work. So, but then they go, well, you're not Joe Rogan. So I feel like it's almost the same thing with real estate. And then I feel like maybe the pros and cons there of a little bit of why I accept it is I really believe on focus, but more and more I'd say over the last 6 months, probably over the last 3 months, really, I'm finding that I'm still focusing on real estate. Where I get in trouble is if I get distracted with other things that are non-revenue generating stuff, getting bogged down with the social media, wasting time, or not even just blogging things down and using my calendar to know what I should be doing throughout the day. I think it's really not knowing, okay, I got all these different things going on. Where do I focus? And being lost in that big picture of what do I do like this hour, this hour, this hour. And then my day goes by and I did nothing. So I think focus is important, but as long as I'm focusing on my real estate and I have structure to make sure I'm on top of the deals that I have, and I make a commitment with myself and my business partner to not take on more than I can handle, I think that's really the key. The thing that I think where people come in and they're correct is if I haven't started with anything and I come to you and I go, Whitney, what do I do? They go, what do you want to do? I go, well, I'm going to flip. I'm going to rent. I'm going to do multifamily. I'm going to do apartments. I'm going to build new construction. It's like, well, hold on. You don't do anything yet. You can't start doing all that. But I didn't start doing all that. I've done it very gradually over 10 or 15 years now. And you slowly get more tools in your tool belt. And the deals that have come, like the multifamily stuff, every time I scale up to something new and different, I didn't go looking for it. It almost fell into my lap and became one of those things where you go, you know what? This kind of makes sense. You know, we can kind of talk through some of those things too, but I do try and focus on like, let me just stick with the bread and butter, like the single family stuff, generate leads. But how is it any different than now when you see the guys on social media that say, well, I got this house. Am I going to rent it? Am I going to flip it? Am I going to Airbnb it? Am I going to do an Airbnb arbitrage? Like they're doing different exit strategies.
Right.
So, I feel like as long as I look at, I need some sort of real estate and I need to get a motivated seller and get it at a discount, there's always going to be a way to make money in it. And now I just have these other ways to make money. And that's changed. Like you probably know him too, Tim Bratz. He always says, every single real estate investor is a buyer and a seller and a lender and a borrower. It's just a matter of like, what are you right now? And I feel like that's what's happened with me.
That's an interesting way to think about that. I've had him on the show as well. I heard I was in a mastermind with him for a while. So yeah, that's interesting. He's good at that as well. I speak to how you gain the confidence in the skill set. Whether you're going to think about wholesaling this or whether you're going to develop a piece of land or, you know, we just talked about, you know, a cell phone tower that you have. I mean, it's like a lot of different things to talk about. Okay. There's this piece of land. Like, how are you going to, you've never done this before, the skill set, the confidence to move forward, you know, with this new thing.
I think anytime something's new, it's terrifying. And you're still sitting there going like, I don't really know what I'm doing. But I think to your point, I was in a mastermind with Tim Bratz as well for a while. That was something that wasn't really around when I started. So figuring out those things, like I was looking back on this very recently, actually, Jason Dries had just took his Do the Impossible class in Texas. And it makes you really think back to like, why do you have some of these fears or these programs? And I think back like trying new things 15 years ago, I made a lot of mistakes, but there was really nowhere to go besides like books. You know what I mean? And like the gurus at that time, they didn't want to admit that everything wasn't like rainbows and sunshine. And where I think now I have guys like you, guys like Tim, people you can reach out to bring in that have done that stuff. And masterminds have been huge for just going like, hey, I think I might be crazy. I don't know what I'm looking at. What do you think? And having a couple of other people look at it and go, no, I think you can make money on this. You know, where I've there's plenty of stuff where I bring it to them and they're like, that's a stupid deal. That's a crazy deal. That's a bad area. You're nuts. Don't do that. You know, when I get a couple of people that normally tell me I'm nuts, go, you know, you might be onto something. I at least feel a little bit better. Like I'm not crazy. I will look into this a little bit. So I get stuff shot. I tell people all the time, like my business partner's job is to talk me out of bad ideas every single day. And every now and then I slip one past, and that's kind of what happened here. So I'm still always nervous looking through this stuff because you never know what's going to happen in the foreseeable future, especially over the last couple of years when stuff's been so high and then the pandemic and you don't really know what's going to happen. So I think you get the confidence from just getting multiple people to stress test your deal, to poke holes in your deal, and to make sure you have something at like a really deep enough discount. And, you know, even when that happens, there's still stuff that has gone wrong. And I think that initially what we talked about came from me trusting the wrong people. I relied on people to help me that I thought were experts in that asset class to give me confidence. And I'll go, well, this person that's supposed to know what they're doing is telling me that I have something here and they're going to help me. So I feel comfortable going through this because I have a mentor or somebody walking me through it. But now I've learned that you have to not only screen the deal, but you absolutely have to screen the mentor as well. And I think now that I'm better at screening deals, I've always been good at screening deals, but I think now better at screening people, that's what gives me the confidence when I go, hey, I trust that I know what I'm looking at. And now I trust that this person knows what they're looking at. And I trust that they are coming from the right place of being able to help me and guide me. I feel like together we can go through and do this. So that's where awesome. It's always still scary, but
yeah. Well, I know you're doing lots of different things or in different places. You know, speak to controlling those things or even the teams that you're putting together for these things. And let's dive into, you talked about this different mentors, right? And even screening them a little bit. I agree completely. They're not all created equal, to say the least. So how do you do that? You move into a new area, new piece of real estate, new location, you're building a team. Kind of walk us through that process and finding those people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things I always say is I find out what I want by finding out what I don't want. And I think that part of what's happened is over the years, I've had so many bad conversations and worked with so many people that just kind of stink that you learn really quick, like, okay, it didn't take me 6 months now to see where this is going. I can tell pretty quick. So I'm able to like cutting it off a lot quicker. So I do a lot of analogies when I talk about building teams like dating, that people go, well, you know, you want a really great contractor. I'm like, yeah, but you want a wife or a husband that, you know, you can have a family with. How do you find them? You find them by dating, and you go on bad dates and you start to find out like, well, I don't like this type of person. This person doesn't. It's a business relationship, but it's not that different than a personal relationship, because especially if you're dealing with people on the commercial side, that could be years that you have to deal with these people on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. So you better make sure that you have those same principles of communication, setting expectations, aligning for whose specific jobs and stuff is what. So that starts to happen. So let's say I get dropped into a city. Initially, the first thing I'm doing is I've always been deal specific, not market specific, especially on the commercial side. I'm always open to things. And that's probably why weird things have found me. But somebody sends me something in Chicago and they go, hey, I got this deal in Chicago. I look at the deal and I go, okay, you know, the deal actually looks like it's pretty good. I don't have anyone there. So now let me go and try and find a team there. So generally within the period of like a few days, I'll stop everything I'm doing and focus just on getting people there to get some boots on the ground to verify that deal, which is, you know, now social media helps that a lot, but I'll start reaching out to realtors, reaching out to brokers, reaching out to property managers, reaching out to contractors, reaching out to inspectors, reaching out to lenders, reaching out to other investors. And I'll just basically spend 72 hours bombing that whole area to try and find out who all the players are and really get their idea. And really within those first few days, you're going to get some feedback for right away, like, this is not a great area. And even people like, for instance, we just did one in, it was in Iowa. Somebody sent it to me and they're like, great deal, great area. Started doing exactly this. Got a bunch of people on, started talking to some brokers. And then they'll generally, well, that's not really my side of town, but I know so-and-so and they're on that side of town. Let me link you up. So you start the conversation with a wide net and you just start trying to talk to literally like everybody in that zip code. And then they'll slowly start to tell you, this isn't my area, call this guy. This is, and it'll niche itself down within a few conversations that now you're within like more of a concentrated area and you have people that know that area, know that building, or know people there that are going to be the kind of the handful of people that really are the ones you want to be talking to. In that situation, again, the guy selling the property was like, you might want to buy this. Great cap rate, low purchase price, huge NOI. So generally, if it's like too big, I go, well, you know, what's up with the area? And sure enough, it was like, area's okay. Yeah, I mean, I was like, what? I talked to the local police department and they said that there's a lot of shootings. They were like, well, yeah, like people get shot at the gas station on the corner like every Friday night, but you can still rent the place out. And I was like, well, no, for me, that's kind of a, no pun intended, but a deal killer. but that kind of stuff, you know, you find out because the high crime to me is a huge one. So initially when I go in, I'm really looking for, is this even an area that I want to be in or not? And what starts to happen is a lot of the times it's not, but it opened up the conversation. And now I start to go, okay, cool. I went to the east side of Chicago. And basically what I heard is I don't want to be in this area. But now I've had some good conversations with some good people. And I go, cool, well, I like you. You know what you're talking about. This was a great conversation. And one of the first tests I have is just the ethics test of, are they going to try and go, I got a guy, he's out of state, he's looking to buy a deal, I'm going to push him to buy this deal so I can make my commission or get the job. And when they do the opposite and they go, look, I'd love to help you, but you really shouldn't be buying this deal. You really shouldn't be in this area. I appreciate that. That gives me some credibility that they're not just looking for a one and done to take advantage of me. And then I go, okay, well, I'd like to work with you. Where do you suggest I go? And then they start to redirect me if that wasn't the right idea. And like literally it just starts to paint a trail and find itself
in the conversation. That's awesome. I mean, it sounds like you're just willing to start putting some legwork in, right? You're making calls and asking what you're investigating, right? Yeah. And I feel like as entrepreneurs, we're often investigators, to say the least. And so, you move into this area, just impressive. You know, you're just going to start calling people. Are you sharing the exact deal with that person? I know there's probably listeners who are thinking, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to tell that person about this piece of property that I'm looking at buying. Do you share with them what you're planning and the project that you're considering, or are you just kind of getting a general feel?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm talking to buyers, then that's a little bit of a different story, but everybody else, I mean, sure, they're really going to have to know. So at the very least, they'll give the area. If I have it under contract or I have a JV agreement with somebody, then I don't care at all.
Of course.
But if not, then I'll do some general vicinity of like, hey, you know, this zip code, this area of town. And then when I have some more specific conversations, if it looks like I'm going to send somebody in there, then I'll start to go like, okay, let's set this up. Here's the address. Here's where you want to go. But if I don't, and it's just a little bit of a market research initially, then I'll do it a little bit more of the area. I won't give the exact address. But generally, I do have something in writing that's going to protect me prior to starting to send people out there. Because if I don't, okay, I don't even want to waste my time really going in and digging in if I don't have something that's locking me into the deal.
So you say something that paper that's signed or signed. What are you speaking to exactly? It's not a contract yet, or at least a letter of intent. How do you handle that?
Yeah, at least a letter of intent is really where I want to go. So like a non-binding letter of intent at the very least, just something saying like, okay, I have exclusive access to this for 7, 10, 15 days to be able to go do that. Or if it's some sort of JV that I am able to market that and I get a first right of refusal on whatever it is, or stuff like that, you know.
What about, so now screening those people, you're making all these calls and maybe it's somebody that's, you know, really going to become a part of your team there, work on this property specifically. They have skill sets maybe that you need. How do you screen them? How do you go a little deeper into ensuring, hey, this is somebody that I need them to be a part of our team in this market at least?
So this is the biggest thing to me, is it really comes down to detail. So everybody says they're detailed guys and no point, but I'm always looking for A players. So one of the things I really try and set up is just a system of tests. So I used to say like, these are all the things I'm going to need. And I realize if you kind of vomit everything right off the bat on the first one or two conversations, they're not going to be able to soak it all in. So I try and set things up because I generally want to set people up for success, not failure. So I give them these little bite-sized tests to go through the process over the due diligence period. And most of them don't make it through. So I don't have to really go and disqualify everybody. It's almost like saying, hey, everybody, I want to go on a bunch of dates. I'm looking for somebody to date me. And I tell everybody to meet me on Thursday at the local YMCA. I don't know where. Go meet me at the local wherever. And out of 50 people, 10 of them show up. Right off the bat, I go, all right, well, these 40, they're not for me because they didn't even show up. And that's almost the first test, is that I just go like, hey, at least call me back at this day on this time. And I try and set specific parameters. And the ones that don't, I look at it as, this is our first date. This is our first communication of potentially going into a 6, 12, 18, 24 month business relationship, maybe 10 years if it goes well. And you're already late. You're already not calling me back. You're already making excuses. Not for me, because that's only going to get worse. And especially on commercial stuff, on remote stuff, when you're doing things out of state, communication is the absolute deal killer. Even if you have a good deal, if you have bad communication and a bad expectation with your team, you're going to have a nightmare of a scenario. So if I know that communication is going to be like the main thing that I need being an out-of-state investor, and on that first date, they're already not communicating, red flag, because it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. So that's like the first test. Are they even going to do that stuff? So I initially I'll find something like, so if I'm putting in, like if there's enough people in there, because you go into some of these like tertiary markets and you don't have so many people to pick from. So you do have to be a little bit choosier, but some of the big ones where you just have a ton of people, I'll put things out and I'll say like, hey, here's what I'm looking for, contractor, property manager, broker, whatever. And I'll put somewhere in that ad on social media or on Craigslist or wherever I post it. In there, I'll bury something that says, send me your favorite color. send me your favorite food. And 90% of them will send me very impressive resumes. And then five or six will say pizza, Chinese food, green. And I'm like, that's the person that's looking at details. That's the person I want.
I have not heard of that example before. Like, send me your favorite food or color. That's creative. I use other things in job descriptions, just like similar to that, but I've not heard of that. That's clever. So you go through that, some of that process, you screen them, whatnot. At least you're going to start using them. Maybe they don't last forever. Obviously it's going to be a continual screening, right? Maybe they should have that first meeting, but then they don't return any calls, or maybe they do shoddy work or whatever it may be. But what about the communication then? How do you communicate? What kind of frequency, you know, people that are on your team, what happens to you, especially, you know, you talked about building teams all over the country. What does that look like to communicate all over the country to numerous different teams?
Technology has definitely helped with that a lot. And one of the things I tell everybody is, how do you communicate best? Because there's like a good example. One of my buddies, our contractor, would like joke around and say, you know if I need something quick, I just shoot Nick a text message. But if I want to have an hour and a half long conversation, I call the other guy. And the other guy's like kicking me under the table. I go, hey man, that's not my fault. That's your fault. Because you train that person that when they call you and they want to just talk about their mother-in-law for an hour and a half, you pick up the phone and you let them do it. So he likes getting on the phone. So that's great for him. For me, I'm not a phone guy. I'm a text message, email guy. Call me in case of emergency. I don't have 30 minutes to dilly-dally, but some people enjoy that. Me, I don't. So for me personally, I have to have somebody on my team that has a phone that they can take videos on, has the internet so they can use Google Drives and Dropbox. Because there's guys that can build a house beautiful for a great price, but they have a flip phone. They're never going to be able to give me the pictures and the videos and the communication that I need. So they're just not going to be a great fit for me, even though they're great at what they do. So I think, you know, back to the dating scenario, there's people that are great team members out there, but are they a great team member for you, for what you need? I need quick communication. I don't need long drawn out things because I don't want my whole day to be being on the phone talking. That's not why I got into real estate. A big thing is for me is expectations. So if I do hire them and now we're going to go in, let's say it's a property manager. I go, cool, what are the hours? You're going to be there 12 to 5, Monday to Friday, and then whatever on Saturday. Great. So before we even hire you, here's what we're going to agree to. When you go into work every day at 12 o'clock, you are going to FaceTime me or my assistant and show me that you're there and you're in the office, and you're going to show them the three things that you need to get done that day. At the end of the day, you're going to FaceTime her again, and you're going to show her all the three things that we had as our top priorities that you did. If they're not done, there better be some sort of expectation or some sort of proof or discussion about what came up and why that didn't get done. And if you didn't do that, you don't get paid for that day. Immediately, if they can't handle that, it's like, hey, this was part of the agreement when we first got on here. Same thing, a contract. Hey, you're supposed to be there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. I expect a FaceTime morning and when you leave at the end of the day. You can literally train kids now to, oh, FaceTime daddy at 9 a.m. when you get up for school, FaceTime daddy at 6 p.m. before you go to bed. And if you can't train somebody to do that, that's part of your team, that's an adult that's working on a multi-million-dollar building, if they can't handle that, they don't deserve to be there anyway. So just that basic thing, if they're not willing to do that or they're not doing that, it's usually because they're not there, they're slacking off, they're up to no good. Somebody that's doing a good job, they're not going to be like, oh, I couldn't, they want to get paid and they want to show you, man, I was here all day. I busted my butt all day. Here's the things you want done. Here's proof. Pay me. You know what I mean? So they're going to be quick to tell you that stuff. It's the people that you're not getting the communication and the answers for. It's usually a red flag because they're not doing what they say they're going to do. So holding your feet to the fire on that point, you know, the first time they get mad at you, you're the bad guy for not paying them. How could you do this? The second time, it's a whole other discussion. And then the third time, they're out.
How often are you going to that property or communicate, you know, to be there, to see it, to communicate in person?
I'll do all the free stuff first. So I set up everything I can first before I have to go there. Once all of that stuff is passed, and now it's kind of like, all right, we have to make a decision. Let's physically go there. I'll go there for maybe a day or two. But after that, I generally won't pop up that much. Maybe once a quarter, maybe once every 6 months. I'll threaten to go there quite often, but I generally won't really pop up that much. Now, if something goes wrong,
of course,
then I'm there. That's kind of what happens.
So, you know, hey. I love how you stress setting expectations. There's times I've not done that well and it comes back to bite me, right? Or, you know, learn, hey, you know, and, you know, especially hiring people, right? You want them to know what's expected of them. They want to know, right? How do you even measure them if you've not set those expectations? So even something like a, like you said, hey, you know, but when you get here in the morning, you're going to take it, you're going to do FaceTime. And when you leave, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to FaceTime, show me the project, show me the work completed. Anything else like that, that you're telling them up front, hey, this is the expectations. You mentioned like, okay, you're going to be working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Monday, Wednesday, whatever. You know, what else are you confirming up front so you're ensuring that communication set or expectations, you know, are set?
I try and set the expectation for me again personally that I'm available all day. Let's check in. So text me if you need stuff, but only call me if it's an emergency. I don't want to just get blown up all day. And I also, to credit Sim Bratz, if something happens, don't call me with a bunch of problems. Call me with the problem and then give me what your three solutions would be. And then from there, like, we can work out and we can talk through it. But I don't want me to be the first line of defense for something happened. What do I do? It's like, I'm not your parent. You know, your job is to be able to think a little bit. And I want you to think through those things. If I'm just the hidden case of emergency and everything's an emergency, I'm not helping you and you're not helping me. So I do try and encourage them and empower them to use their heads a little bit and to try and problem solve a little bit. And I also give the expectation of if you don't go to work that day, if something else pops up that day, I would rather you text me and tell me, hey, I'm at Disney with my kids, screw you, than no communication. So to me, it's kind of like, I can handle everything but silence. So if you ghost me and we go 72 hours, like with no communication, there's a problem. I'm sending somebody in and you might be out of a job. So
yeah, my kids and my team, when they ask me something, one of my first responses, what do you think? How would you solve this? Right. I want to train them to think that way. Right. Exactly what you just said, like bring how you think you should, you know, you think you would fix it as well or whatever, how you would answer fix this problem. So incredible. Nick, we're going to switch to a few final questions. Tell me, do you have any predictions in the real estate market or anything you're expecting over the next 6 to 12 months? And, or, you know, how is that affecting what you're buying or selling or what you're doing?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting more so. I just did a couple of discussions about this. There's a lot of factors that tie in that I don't think did before. We're still in a shortage. And I think that's going to play into our favor a little bit. But with the interest rates going up, people are going to have to get more aggressive on prices. So there might actually be some good deals on there. I'm interested to see what happens with the guys that took on syndications that were getting private funds that maybe didn't account for the change in the interest rate. And now when they go to refinance, I don't know if they're going to be able to pull out the money to pay back their investors or be able to cash flow. So I do think on the commercial side, there's going to be an opportunity to pick up some good deals. I wish I had that crystal ball and know if rates are still going to keep going up, but I definitely am going to be looking to pick stuff up. I'm just going to be very careful about obviously building in a little bit of equity in case things fluctuate a little bit and trying to lock in as much long-term debt as I can. And I think sub twos, the more I can take over stuff, the first 100 units I ever bought on a multifamily side were all 10% down, seller held the rest for 5 years with an adjustment that we could add another 5 years on there. So stuff like that I can take over debt in place, I think is just a really smart play. So if I can find that, I'm going to try and pick up as much of that as I can.
Awesome. So when you're looking at all these different types of projects, how do you prepare for a downturn? Is there anything else that says, you know what? Okay, now we're doing this cell phone tower. Now we're doing this, whatever it is, you know, wholesaling or we're buying this piece of commercial property. What are some guidelines that you're using to ensure, hey, if there is a big downturn or whatever that happens, plus AC units go out, plus whatever, you know, you're prepared?
Well, I'm trying on the stuff that I'm looking basically to say, I either want things that are like very short term or very long term. I think kind of the in between that, like the 1 to 3-4 years is where you might get in trouble. So I'm just looking at things and saying, if I'm buying it for cash flow, I want to make sure that I'm able to have the cash flow there. And if they suddenly build 7 times the inventory there, and I do have to get competitive with my rent, do I have enough in there that maybe I can refinance that at 75%? Or maybe if I need to drop it within 10 or 15%, I'm still at least okay to wait it out, because I know some of those deals that were scary deals when the market turned last time bounced back great. So if you can just weather that storm, and I'm buying for cash flow. Again, I want long-term cash flow. So I'm not stuck in 3 or 4 years trying to refinance at a higher interest rate, or I'm looking for something that I can literally be in and out of in the next 6 months. So if I can get in and out in something really short, I'm going to do that. If not, I'm going to be looking to hold things a lot longer. And again, have a little bit of a stress test on there that if I have to drop the rent or if I have to refinance at an extra 10 or 15% lower than I thought, I have some cushions in there. So just being a little bit more disciplined and looking for stuff with a little bit more meat on the bone for it just in case, I think is the best way you can predict there. And last but not least there, looking at markets that have strong economic factors, because the last time you have markets like Detroit that everything was banking on like one industry and then that industry goes south. So if I do have to look at now holding something a little bit long-term, I want to make sure that there's other areas that are bringing that economy in there, that the market's not looking like it's going to be on a downturn, because I don't want to be looking at 5 years from now, a market that kind of tanked.
What's your best source for meeting new investors right now?
Masterminds have been great. You know, Facebook groups are great, but there's some of them that are really out there. But I've seen it definitely in the last 6 months, some of the masterminds that I've paid to be a part of, the conversations are just so much different, so much more supportive, so much less trash, and just people like the negativity on there, man, like I it's just been crazy lately.
Yeah. So in-person masterminds.
In-person masterminds and the groups that you, because generally they'll have like a private right. Facebook group. Or, so those have been huge for just networking on there, more so than in person. I think getting in with a good group of people on a mastermind or something like that with high level guys that you can get on discussions on Facebook pages that only they have access to.
Yeah.
That's been the best for me over the last 6 months.
What are some of the most important metrics you track?
I absolutely suck at tracking metrics. This is something that I need to get a lot better at. I attempt to look at lately, like how many dials, how many calls and stuff people are making on a daily basis, how many offers they're putting out. And that's allowed me, again, like finding out what you want, but finding out what you don't want. I just recently found out that my guy was not doing a good job and he was billing me for a lot of hours he wasn't doing. So we fired him. And I have to get better at tracking that stuff now. So I would like to be looking at what I'm spending on marketing versus what's coming in from what channels versus how many offers are going out on a weekly basis, how many dials are getting made on a daily basis, and how many of those are converting actually into leads. But I am so inconsistent with tracking that stuff. It's a huge Achilles heel for me.
What about some daily habits that you are disciplined about that have produced the highest return?
I keep pointing, like you can see, whiteboards and writing things down, as crazy it is being that I'm a digital guy. There's something to be said for one of my mentors has told me, if you have more than three priorities in a day, you have no priorities in a day. And I literally wake up and I sit down and the first thing I do the night before now, because doing it in the morning, I found this just doesn't help me either. I'll say, these are the things that I need to do tomorrow. And I literally have something here that says, here's the three things today. And then I have a running list on the other side of like, if you can get to those things. And I'm making a deal with myself that no matter what happens, I don't care if it's 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm not allowed to go to bed that day until I at least get those three things done. And holding myself accountable to that has helped me in a massive way of keeping me accountable and getting that momentum going.
I love that quote. I don't know if it's yours or somebody else's, but I'll give it to you anyway. I mean, you said—
Randy Scott did it from his empowerment.
You said, if you have more than three priorities in a day, you have no priorities. I think that's interesting. You know, write those three things down. And man, that helps you to focus. Right? It helps you to focus on your day. You know, we were talking about in other aspects, you know, real estate, being able to do lots of different things. However, I think still you're willing to do different things in real estate, but in that moment, you're focused on that thing, right? Whatever that is, you know, whether it's finding those team members or building that team or even learning this new type of deal or whatever you're having to work on, there is focus there. It's just not in an asset class specifically, right? Yeah. So I like the willingness to be able to be flexible and learn new things. And I think in the long run, man, you know, you've learned so much, you can apply it to a lot of different parts of real estate, right? And so what about the number one thing that's contributed to your success?
Tenacity, 100%. I feel like that's a lot of the things that were ingrained into me from jiu-jitsu and boxing is just being in a tough situation, getting your bell rung, wanting to run for the hills or hide your head under a blanket or just tap out and quit, and taking a breath and going, I've been in a bad situation before. Instead of just giving up, let me try and stay calm and find a way out and find a way to get back on top. And I feel like that's the biggest thing is most people, when stuff gets hard, they quit. And I quit, but I'll quit for the day and I'll get back up and I'll fight again tomorrow. And that, I think, has been the only reason why I'm successful is just because I never quit.
How do you like to give back?
Man, I like to give back to people I try and donate time. I try and donate money. I try and make myself available to educate people. But I mean, really, it's some of like the stuff people don't see, like somebody calls you and they really need help with like medical bills, or I had a friend that was in a custody case with his daughter and he couldn't afford the lawyer bill. And then you go and you give them that money and they wind up sending you a picture saying, hey, I got my kid back. I don't know how I'm going to repay you. And you get to say, don't worry about repaying me. Get yourself together. Be a good dad. You know, at some point, somebody's going to want something from you. You just do the same type of thing. Like that stuff to me is what makes it all worth it. It's just those little things that when somebody really comes up to you and they really need help with something and you're able to go, here, I can do this for you. That kind of stuff goes a long way for the people in my life.
Nick, I'm grateful to have met you and had you on the show. Appreciate your just willingness to share how and why you're willing to do different parts of real estate, how that's okay, how you've made that work, even going into building the teams, to screening, to the communication, to setting the expectations, some key things that are so important if you plan to be successful in almost any project, right? I mean, in real estate. And oftentimes we have to learn those things the hard way, too many times, I think, for myself anyway. So that's great. I appreciate you sharing that. Even the quote that you said, if you have more than three priorities in the day, you have no priorities. But even how masterminds have helped you in a big way in raising money and finding investors and growing, it's really good for us to know that and really think about, hey, have I spent the time to find a mastermind or a group of guys or gals that are way ahead of me, right? Are willing to pour into me, that are serious about this business. Thank you again. How can the listeners get in touch with you and learn more about you?
I appreciate you having me on, man. This has been a blast. If people want to find me, If you go to my website's nicknicknick.com. It's the easiest website in the world. But if you go on nicknicknick.com/links, it will give you every link for everywhere you can hear my podcast. And it will link up everywhere with me on social media. And I tell people, if you're interested in discussing working on a deal together, texting me is the best way because I lose everything else. So 516-540-5733 is the direct way to talk to me about deals. Everywhere else, nicknicknick.com/links.
Thank you for being a loyal listener of the Real Estate Syndication Show. Please subscribe and like the show. Share it with your friends so we can help them as well. Don't forget, go to lifebridgecapital.com where you can sign up and start investing in real estate today. Have a blessed day.